Hi there. Thanks for the honor of participating in this session. I want to tell you about the Supreme Court decision and about the Affordable Care Act, and I think I've got about 150 slides, and I'm not going to get through them in 12 minutes, so I'm trying to load the more important ones first. And there's a handout in the back that describes a one-pager that describes the Affordable Care Act. So I just want to talk about, as I said, the decision, why we needed to pass health care reform, why it's controversial, what the law has achieved, and what we can do. So, passed the Affordable Care Act, March of 2010, in great triumph, but views on Obamacare are still, 2 years later, extremely divided. The House almost immediately in 2011 voted to repeal it. There were a number of legal challenges from 26 states. The arguments were presented to the Supreme Court in March of this year, and there was a decision in June. So what did the Supreme Court do? Question one, is the issue ripe for a decision? Is it too early to consider this law? The Supreme Court said no. Question two, is the individual mandate constitutional? To the gasping surprise of many of us, the Supreme Court said yes, it is, and we'll talk about what the individual mandate is. Then the question is, was Congress entitled to impose conditions on the states in expanding the Medicaid program? And here is where the Supreme Court again surprised many of us and said no, that Congress had exceeded its authority by requiring that even though the federal government was covering the additional cost of the Medicaid expansion, that they, as a penalty for states not doing that, they reserved the right to withdraw existing funding, and the court said they can't do that. So what does this mean, and now what? Well, we've won at least a couple of battles this week. So let's talk about the groundwork, the background for this decision. We know that economic inequality has been exploding. Right before Obama was elected, the housing bubble burst, that was the background for the election. Not news to many of you, but just to reiterate, the consequences of our dysfunctional healthcare system is that we have 50 million people uninsured. People do die from being uninsured. 75%, many people go into bankruptcy due to health costs, and 75% of medical bankruptcies happen to people who have health insurance. Uninsurance is unequal by race and ethnicity. We spend $2.5 trillion a year. It's the most expensive system in the world. And we don't cover anybody, and it has a lot to do with how our system is structured. The quality of our care, and I'm not going to read all these details, but the quality of our care doesn't reflect the amount of money that we spend. So what the Affordable Care Act does is expand coverage, improve affordability, provide a down payment on cost control, improve quality, and protect Medicare. And I'm going to come back to sort of the these provisions and how they related to the Supreme Court questions and decisions. Now, as you've heard also, there were significant limits in the Affordable Care Act on coverage for reproductive health. Contraception as prevention was questioned, although is now being coverage for that is now being provided. There were limits on abortion care. Undocumented immigrants are not included for coverage, and all of these measures are incomplete. So what did the court say was okay? So the part of the individual mandate is the part of the law that will establish health exchanges, health insurance exchanges for small businesses and individuals, sort of a Travelocity kind of system for obtaining insurance. It will limit premiums and out-of-pocket spending. It subsidizes premiums up to 400% of the poverty level, which is about $88,000 for a family of four. And this is significant because 90% of the uninsured are, in fact, under that income level. Why small businesses? Because most people in this country do get coverage through employment. Small businesses in particular fall short on that front, and this is just an example of some of the influence on affordability, and I'm sorry, I'm just going to sort of flip through that. Now, on Medicaid, and that provision is due to go into effect in 2014. Supreme Court said okay on that. Medicaid, the other significant thing the law is supposed to do in 2014 is expand Medicaid. 37% of the uninsured have incomes below 133% of the federal poverty level. The law says that Medicaid will now cover, or is intended to cover everybody up to that level. It ends a lot of the other features of Medicaid that were not entirely income-based that kept people away from coverage. The federal government said that it would pay. Some states were only covering people under it's a joint state-federal program. Some states only covered people who had, say, 50% of the federal poverty level in income. The federal government offers to pay the difference in the cost of covering these people for 3 years. Now, because of the state, because of the Supreme Court decision, this expansion is optional. Now, are the states going to do it? In this election year, a lot of states are saying, no, we don't want that money. We don't want to cover those people. Never mind. We're not going to do it. Alabama, for example, has said, I think so. Florida is saying they're not going to, but I think many observers think that in all likelihood, eventually the states will decide to do that. Now, these are just some of the additional improvements that are available through the Affordable Care Act. Excuse me for a sec. And some of these things I hope folks are somewhat familiar with. Young adults can stay on their parents' plans. There are small business tax credits. There is a ban on insurance industry abuses, excluding kids with pre-existing conditions, cutting off your care midstream because you're sick, a ban on lifetime limits on the amount of coverage, and eventually there'll be a ban on annual limits. There are limits on insurance premiums, not enough, but these are beginning to go into effect, and requirements on how much insurance companies need to pay on your care as opposed to their administrative costs. There are a number of system changes that are going into effect that will make it easier to control the cost of care. Medicare, the lifespan of the Medicare Part A Trust Fund has been extended because of the provisions, the changes that have been made to Medicare by the law. None of the changes in the Medicare law would authorize cuts in benefits. So far, costs, according to Health Affairs, healthcare spending growth slowed from double digits to 4%. Or lower in the last couple of years. Hospital admissions are down, not just because of the effect of the recession. Some of this has to do with the kinds of structural changes, again, that the ACA is suggesting and starting to implement. This is not necessarily reflected in premiums. Why is this controversial? How come we don't all love this? Again, lots of money in the healthcare industry, $2.5 trillion. A lot of interest, although they pharmaceutical, hospital, other industries, although they participated in forming the Affordable Care Act, are not necessarily so happy about the kinds of restrictions that might result. There are the political champions for health care reform don't comprise a clear constituency. There are social divisions that still that we haven't come to terms with on the role of government and issues like abortion. There are bigger fights facing us in this election year, and the next week will be be determinative in terms of the direction of a lot of these questions. Probably there are not enough votes in Congress to repeal the law, but there certainly has been a tremendous amount of energy spent on undermining and defunding provisions of the law, and there are a number of extreme proposals. I think we'll hear a little bit more later about Medicare. This is just an outline of now vice presidential nominee Ryan's Medicare plan. I know you can't see it very well, but it will sharply reduce federal funding on Medicare from the current 6.5% of GDP to 4.5% of GDP. So you can imagine the consequences for the elderly who depend upon it. So, the Affordable Care Act, I would suggest we need to defend it, implement it, and improve it. There are competing visions, and these are very much at stake in the election, that we either believe that government policies distort the healthcare market and we need to put consumers in charge, let us go out and negotiate with hospitals and drug companies and so on and see how we do, or recognize that government power and resources are essential to ensure that access is available based on need, not just on income, that we must empower the government to negotiate prices, to balance out the power of industry, and that we should proceed with initiating payment and system reforms, and that these are related to improving quality. States can, and many are, beginning to implement exchanges. We hope that they will begin to incorporate larger businesses sooner, which they have the option to do. But as of 2017, we can look at creating public insurance systems, and certainly states like Vermont are looking towards creating an all-payer system, and hopefully at some point we can talk about single-payer systems as well. Oops. So another way to say it is that we're facing a fierce medieval patriarchy financed by corporations versus traditional American values of democracy, independence, fairness, progress, and innovation. We need to be involved, stay involved, support our allies, and certainly vote. The Equal Health Network has a listserv. There's a list in back if you'd like to sign up, and we'd love to stay in touch.
Thank you very much. Time for one question. Thank you very much. We have time for at least one question. Are there any questions? Dr. Allen, please come up.
During the time that we've had to think about this and to learn about this this act, I have been amazed at the amount of disinformation that is there. AARP, to me, has done a good job in making the provisions of the Affordable Care Act clear. But I was reading an article, and they were, the person who wrote the article, a young woman, was addressing questions that people had. And one of the questions was almost, to me, bizarre, and it was, will we be jailed if we do not have health insurance? So the level of hysteria and misinformation is there. And I wonder, Dr. Schaefer, what you think about the work that we're doing at present as public health workers, but certainly as a government, in making clear to the public what these provisions are and what they mean to them in their daily lives. I haven't seen that out there.
You're the only one. No, I think, look, it was hard introducing this law. It was hard passing this law. As I've indicated, even there are many provisions of this law that we really had a push when the Democrats were running both houses of Congress and had the White House to get adequate coverage, and we didn't succeed in all cases. I think a couple, where many of us are sort of asking kind of what up with this stuff, and including on women's issues as well as healthcare reform. How can these issues be so starkly clear and folks just aren't getting on board? And I think it's an interesting issue for us to think about, in addition to the factors that I mentioned, the power of the industry and the extraordinary funding at every single level of government, including state and local, of corporate opposition. One of the things I think would be interesting for us to look at is what segment of the population are most prey to these kinds of incursions and misrepresentations. And I think that social isolation as well as social divisions probably has a lot to do with you know, where people get their information and how they respond to it. But so thank you for your question.
Thank you very much.